From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo traveled to the Middle East along with White House National Security Advisor John Bolton. Pompeo gave a major address on Thursday in Cairo, Egypt, just about a decade after President Barack Obama had made a historic speech in the same city. Pompeo's lengthy address laid out a new Trumpian vision for foreign policy while openly denouncing Obama's approach. Much of that vision centered on isolating Iran. The trip intended to offer nations clarity on President Donald Trump's sudden announcement of a complete withdrawal of U.S. forces from Syria. But according to the New York Times, the two officials left the administration's message muddier than they found it. In Jerusalem on Sunday, Mr. Bolton laid out conditions for withdrawal that could leave American troops in Syria indefinitely. And when reporters asked Pompeo about that contradiction, he simply said, "There's no contradiction whatsoever. This is a story made up by the media." Meanwhile, the withdrawal from Syria has apparently officially begun, but according to news reports, it is chaotic, and so far only equipment is being transferred out. My guest is Rahul Mahajan, the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he is the U.S. Foreign Policy and Empire Correspondent for our program. Welcome back, Rahul.
Great to be with you again, Sonali.
So first, let's see if you can make sense of this trip by Bolton and Pompeo. You had, I suppose, a brief timeline is that Trump has a phone conversation with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, after which he suddenly announces that he's going to withdraw all forces from Syria. And some allies start to panic. And so Bolton and Pompeo head to the Middle East. Bolton gives a speech in Israel saying that troops could remain there indefinitely depending upon ISIS. And then Pompeo gives a speech in Cairo. What was the whole point of this Middle East tour?
Well, okay, so in terms of Syria, what's happening is there is a battle being fought and Bolton is doing his best to basically undo the withdrawal. I mean, I think it's obvious that if you say we're going to stay until all opposition, in this case ISIS, has been eliminated, that's kind of traditional in the history of counterinsurgency. It usually means you're going to stay forever. Certainly, it means you're going to stay indefinitely. So he's trying to basically undermine it, but as we can see already, there is equipment withdrawal, which means that, of course, even if troops remain, their ability to conduct operations will be severely limited. So it looks like we're proceeding, although with a lot of sort of open wrangling and wars being fought in the media as well as behind closed doors. With regard to the trip to Cairo, I mean, I think it's very clear, stick your finger in Obama's eye. And do it as explicitly as possible while simultaneously trying to say almost nothing of substance about any real changes. I mean, you can just, Pompeo has perhaps imbibed this idea from Trump that it's perfectly okay to contradict yourself repeatedly in the same speech and even in the same sentence. I mean, he actually criticizes Obama for his withdrawal from the Middle East, supposed, and says that U.S. withdrawal can only cause chaos, and then says we're withdrawing from Syria. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out the contradictions here.
So the speech that Bolton made before Pompeo in Israel with Netanyahu was supposed to be one of those. That was where he basically said that the withdrawal was conditional on ISIS. And there seems to be on ISIS being defeated, there seems to be a point of contradiction between Trump and Bolton about whether ISIS has indeed been defeated. And then you have Erdogan, the Turkish president's agenda here. He wrote an op-ed in the New York Times saying, leave it to us. Turkey will take care of this. Turkey will, you know, will take on the burden of doing this service for the international community. to get rid of ISIS. What is happening here between Trump, Erdogan, and Bolton? Is this a internal conflict between Trump and Bolton?
Well, first of all, I would say it's really interesting that in Erdogan's op-ed, he not only says that you should leave it to Turkey, he makes a point of contrasting Turkey's supposedly far more humane liberation of al-Bab with much less collateral damage as compared to the U.S. liberation of Raqqa, which involved, as we've now found out, the destruction of perhaps two-thirds of the buildings, or perhaps, you know, things that had happened in Raqqa until that point, plus the liberation, means essentially that Raqqa was destroyed and there was a great deal of what the U.S. military likes to call collateral damage. So he is making a case that not only can they handle it more efficiently, they can handle it more humanely, which is trying to take over what used to be the common ground, you know, the ground of U.S. rhetoric, especially in its military interventions. What's going on between Trump and Bolton, I think, is simple. Trump very impulsively made this decision while talking to Erdogan, and again, it's very clear that Trump's new feeling of vulnerability with regard to Erdogan's good opinion has entirely to do with the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi and the way that Trump and MBS so massively miscalculated the international reaction to that. It's gotten to the point that even Trump has to take it into account. And so he was on the one hand trying to figure out how to placate Erdogan, on the other he constantly, like a lot of Americans, has this feeling that whenever the United States is engaged in military action abroad, it is basically doing some kind of favor to the people that it is occupying, bombing, etc. And so why should we continue to do favors for these people, especially when Erdogan doesn't want us to? So he made this decision. He probably did not know anything about the considerations, obviously even the logistical considerations for the military when he made it. And since then, a number of advisors have been trying to walk it back. It's just that Bolton has done it much more openly and, probably from Trump's perspective, obnoxiously.
What is Israel's agenda in all of this? It seems as though Israel and Turkey are vying for U.S. alliance, the U.S. Friendship on this issue. Israel does not want the U.S. to leave Syria. Turkey does want the U.S. to leave Syria. Bolton, in appearing with Netanyahu in Israel, essentially tried to assuage Netanyahu, and then you had Erdogan jumping in with his op-ed saying, no, this is why the U.S. should leave Syria. What is Israel's agenda?
Well, you know, as far as I can tell, of course, there's a number of standard things, but as far as I can tell, in recent years, it's all been completely overpowered by paranoia about Iran. Right. And I think that Iran is driving most of what Israel wants regarding Syria. It's driving very much of Pompeo's speech in Cairo. So I think that it's pretty obvious that the more the United States withdraws from Syria, the more ground that Iran has to build and strengthen its relationship with the Assad regime and its foothold in Syria. And of course, from the U.S. perspective, Iran already has complete control over Lebanon, and that means, of course, that Iran is the new expansionist power in the Middle East. And so they are paranoid beyond belief about this. And, you know, and of course, there's just enough facts on the ground to make them able to argue for it. But it really doesn't seem to have very much connection with Iran's actual ambitions.
Right. Well, you brought up Pompeo again. Let's turn back to his speech in Cairo. He gave the speech on Thursday, and I mentioned just about 10 years after Barack Obama gave a historic speech in the Middle East. Here is part of what Pompeo said.
It was here in this city, that another American stood before you. He told you that radical Islamist terrorism does not stem from an ideology. He told you that 9/11 led my country to abandon its ideals, particularly in the Middle East. He told you that the United States and the Muslim world needed, quote, a new beginning, end of quote. The results of these misjudgments have been dire. America's reluctance, our reluctance to wield our influence, kept us silent as the people of Iran rose up against the mullahs in Tehran in the Green Revolution. The Ayatollahs and their henchmen murdered, jailed, and intimidated freedom-loving Iranians. And they wrongly blamed America for this unrest when it was their own tyranny that had fueled it. Emboldened, the regime spread its cancerous influence to Yemen, to Iraq, to Syria, and still further into Lebanon. The age of self-inflicted American shame is over, and so are the policies that produce so much needless suffering.
And that is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo speaking in Cairo, Egypt on Thursday. The age of American shame is over. Rahul, I don't think I've ever heard an official U.S. head or official cabinet member sitting, you know, as part of the White House, as part of the head of the State Department, so openly denounce a previous president. Kind of shocking.
Well, at this point, I mean, we've seen so much. I don't think it's any longer surprising, at the very least. I think it's a little bit funny that these people are so have such a poor sort of understanding of their own abilities, their own rhetorical skill, as to think that they can actually, go back to the same place and somehow achieve as great a effect as Obama while in the opposite direction. And obviously this speech is not going to do that. This speech has very little to appeal to anyone. So yes, he's absolutely denounced the idea that American presidents should be going around doing apologies, even if they are at best extremely conditional or partial apologies like those that Obama made with regard to the Bush administration and the war on terror. There's going to be no more of that, apparently. And I guess that's returning to a great American value, like the sainted, recently deceased George Herbert Walker Bush, who once says, I'm always for America. I don't care what it does, and I will never apologize for America. So that at least is consistent with apparently what used to be a bipartisan American value. So Obama did depart very slightly from that, very, very slightly, at a point when there seemed to be a need to actually rehabilitate the reputation of the United States in the world. This speech by Pompeo is certainly not going to do that. I have to say, I hate to say it, but I agree in part that Obama's policies were disastrous. And in particular, again, I don't know what else there is to say, but when ISIS arose, simply allowing it to take over when any kind of competent military force could have stopped that, it is going to go down as a black mark, and it certainly harmed a tremendous number of people. And in the end, when there was all this fighting, which, by the way, the United States was shelling Raqqa, there was very, very little out of the anti-war movement or anyone else protesting that. In the end, people got killed anyway. Military intervention. How much better would it have been if Obama hadn't sat on his thumbs and waited until Americans were taken hostage and murdered to stop ISIS, which had no ISIS had no military magical secrets. It won because nobody fought it, and anyone who did try to fight it didn't have any better equipment than they did, unlike the U.S. military. It would have been very easy for him to stop, and that is I think it's possible, especially in the light of his later decision, to say that is a black mark on Obama's record.
Right. I remember that time Obama's speech was denounced as an apology tour. If you read it, it really wasn't that. It was maybe an attempt to pay lip service to some sort of olive branch. But as you pointed out, although that speech, which was called A New Beginning, was well received in the Arab and Muslim world, his actual policies that followed from that point didn't live up to some of what he said in that speech. Well, let's go back to what Pompeo said on Thursday in Cairo, just a little under 10 years after Obama spoke.
The United States under President Trump has reasserted its traditional role as a force for good in this region. We've learned from our mistakes. Nations are rallying to our side to confront the regime like never before. Egypt, Oman, Kuwait, and Jordan have all been instrumental in thwarting Iran's efforts to evade sanctions. Saudi Arabia, too, has worked with us to counter Iranian expansion and regional influence. We, the United States, commend each of these efforts. We're also seeing remarkable change. New bonds are taking root that were unimaginable until very recently. Who could have believed a few years ago that an Israeli prime minister would visit Muscat, or that new ties would emerge between Saudi Arabia and Iraq? I also applaud President Sisi's efforts to promote religious freedom, which stands as an example for all leaders and all peoples of the Middle East. America will not retreat until the terror fight is over. We will labor tirelessly alongside you to defeat ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other jihadists that threaten our security and yours. President Trump has made the decision to bring our troops home from Syria. We always do, and now is the time. But this isn't a change of mission. We remain committed to the complete dismantling of ISIS, the ISIS threat, and the ongoing fight against radical Islamism in all of its forms. But as President Trump has said, we're looking to our partners to do more, and in this effort, we will do so going forward, together. America has been criticized for doing too much in the Middle East, and we've been criticized for doing too little. But one thing we've never been is an empire builder or an oppressor.
And that is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo speaking on Thursday in Cairo, Egypt. A lot to discuss there. I suppose this was his attempt at laying out a Trumpian foreign policy, trying to distinguish it from previous foreign policies, talking about the U.S. as being a force for good once more, but also saying we've never been an empire. Rahul Mahajan is my guest. Rahul, how, and it sounded almost like he was sort of channeling Trump many times there, where he laid out this very positive spin about things that have never happened before, allies that are now so excited about being allied with the United States like never before. It sounded like it was mostly hot air, though. What do you think?
It's mostly complete nonsense. And you can see he focuses on two things. One is Iran. And there he somehow seems to think that rallying a whole bunch of countries rhetorically against Iran is much better than, say, having an actual enforceable internationally recognized control over Iran's nuclear program,
which is what that
they
yeah.
dismantled, right? And secondly, some sort of relatively meaningless, again, largely rhetorical gains for Israel, Israeli athletes competing in Arab countries. I mean, fine, but really, who cares? That they care a lot, and you know, in particular people like Pompeo, because as he makes, you know, a point of emphasizing early in his speech is that he's an evangelical Christian. So they care a lot about these sorts of, you know, who knows what to Pompeo, what that's a symbol of. Maybe there's something in Revelation about Israeli pole vaulters that, you know, I've missed. So the rest of it is all completely nonsense.
It's worth reiterating as often as possible, Jared Kushner and Donald Trump's good friend MBS's war in Yemen against the Houthis is empowering Al-Qaeda in Yemen. I mean, there is no coherence or consistency in any of this, even as they try to shape it all around hysteria about Iran.
Right. MBS, by the way, of course, being Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia. So you're right. So on the one hand, even though Pompeo says unequivocally that we will not rest till we've defeated ISIS and Al-Qaeda, their policies are very much empowering Al-Qaeda in Yemen through the support of the war a Saudi war there. So what exactly is happening in Syria then, as far as, you know, going back to that situation there? There was a big concern. I'd love to just take an aside for a minute about the situation of the Syrian Kurds. There was a big concern when Trump first announced the withdrawal of troops from Syria that the U.S. would once more abandon Kurdish groups that have been instrumental in helping the U.S. militarily. Erdogan assured the U.S. and those concerned about Syrian Kurds that he would not. He basically said he had no issue. We had no argument with the Syrian Kurds. What do you think is going on there with the Kurds?
Well, I mean, obviously the United States can't trust Erdogan as far as they can throw him. And what he says and thinks now may be very different from what he says and thinks in a month. And he has shown he has blown hot and cold with regard to Kurds in Turkey as well as in Syria. He started out as a peacemaker with the Kurds. Then he got very angry when in elections the Kurds voted for the Kurdish parties instead of for in larger numbers and in lower numbers for him and his party, and became a terrible punisher of them. So there's certainly no clear way to take Erdogan's assurances seriously. What's happening is that the Kurds are dependent on basically two guarantors of their security. One is American troops and the other is the Assad government. So despite all of the ink spilled by various kinds of leftists about the YPG, the dirty truth is they are fundamentally dependent on their collaboration with the Assad government. If the United States forces leave, then their dependence on the Assad government will increase, and they will have probably less ability to be autonomous or engage in these various experiments and forms of government, all of which may be very nice, but are not going to really matter in the face of ongoing constant military operations. As far as ISIS goes, yes, their power is broken and destroyed right now. What happens if there is no force in the regime that can suppress them? Is this an ideology that's resilient enough to generate a new kind of an attempt at creating a caliphate once more? I think it's anybody's guess. But right now the Kurds are in an extremely precarious situation. They're quite openly resisting U.S. withdrawal.
So, Rahul, just taking the broad view on Trump's foreign policy, it seemed as though in the first year or so of his tenure, he was simply unleashing the military generals to do what they will and focusing more on domestic policy. And we saw escalations in Afghanistan and Syria, and there was basically greater military engagement by the United States. Now, with this sort of about-face on Syria, he followed that with an announced reduction of troops in Afghanistan, although that's in flux a little bit. It seems as though he's taken a different turn in just the last month that has taken what used to be an incoherent U.S. Middle East foreign policy under Obama and made it even more incoherent. Would you agree?
Insofar as that's possible, I suppose he has. There's only been one line through it all that I think is absolutely consistent, which is that the still insufficient protections for civilians and against collateral damage that were instituted partly by the Bush administration and then more under Obama have been systematically dismantled, so that now it's much less likely that they'll pay significant attention to the prospect of killing civilians in any given strike. Other than that, as you say, there is no consistency.
And those hawkish anti-Iran figures within the administration are seemingly driven by just that one issue alone, this sort of bizarre obsession with what is imagined to be Iran's imperial ambitions that is also seemingly driving Trumpian foreign policy in a different way than it drove Obama's foreign policy. Is there any sense you have that the damage could be undone once Trump leaves office? I mean, it took so much political will to put that Iran nuclear agreement together, which was one of the few bright spots of the Obama foreign policy. I'm wondering if the Iranian leadership is waiting Trump out to see if that can be restored, because that worked for them as well. Or it's just, is it all just gone to hell?
I mean, the building of that thing took enormous political will by the Obama administration. They had to, you know, first of all, they tried to rehabilitate their international reputation. I don't know how Trump's successor is going to do that. Then they had to slowly rebuild credibility among allies that the Bush administration had spurned and mocked whenever they wished to. Then he had to strong arm Congress, you know, into making sure that the vote on the Iranian nuclear deal was not a traditional one where they needed a two-thirds majority. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that the Obama administration went into. In fact, it's possible to say that if they'd spent a little more attention on what was happening in Syria and a little on the Iran deal, maybe it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. But it's hard to imagine anybody doing that, especially with the feeling that any successor of Trump is going to have to deal with what Trump in his inaugural address called American carnage, which is even more real after 2 years of Trump than it was before. Right. I'd like to point out actually one part of Pompeo's speech that I thought was really interesting. When he talks about Hezbollah, he makes the bizarre and I think maybe even novel argument that Hezbollah is a wholly owned subsidiary of Iran, and that therefore its stockpiling weapons in Lebanon is a violation of international law. It's truly bizarre. It would be like saying, well, you know, YPG didn't get any less U.S. military aid in its offensives than Hezbollah has gotten from Iran. So does that mean that the YPG's maintaining armed groups as a violation of international law? It's a really weird argument. I doubt it will go anywhere. And this is not the kind of administration that takes arguments to the UN in order to get some sort of legitimacy for their actions. But it was interesting to note nonetheless.
Right. It seems to be Pompeo seems to be continuing in the Trump tradition of inventing his own version of reality on many of these fronts. Rahul, pleasure as always to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Rahul Mahajan is the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he's our U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.